And our guest, Fiona Edwards, is in the studio now, so I think we might as well rip straight into it. So, good afternoon, Fiona. How are you? I'm good, thank you. I think I might have just... I forgot to turn Lisa's mic up the other day, and I might have just done that. But anyway, thanks for coming to the studio.
It's a pleasure.
Didn't get too wet coming in here?
No, managed to get through on a dry spot.
Nice, nice, nice. Coming from?
Raglan. I've been here 30 years.
Ah, yes, yes. Yeah. Town, country?
In the town. We're right pretty much in the centre of town.
Very nice.
Bought here when prices were $65,000.
I don't believe you. Yeah, 65
so,
grand.
65 yeah. grand. So, yep, we bought our first house for 65 grand.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. And it seemed like a huge amount of money at the time.
Yeah.
All our neighbours that had been living in Raglan for years said, mate, you've been ripped off, 65,000. Why don't you pay that for that shack?
All right, yeah. And you came here from?
I came here from, originally Auckland, but also lived in Rotorua and in Wellington.
Okay.
So moved around the country but living in different places. And I'd worked for the Department of Conservation, Royal Forest and Bird Protection Society, so I come from quite an environmental background.
Mm-hmm.
My brother is a farmer, or was a farmer. He's now an archaeologist. Apparently more money in digging things up than planting things.
His farm was?
He was farming down in the South Island. My husband and I sort of landed in Raglan. He got a job in Hamilton. And I just could not see myself ever living in Hamilton. So we looked around and discovered Raglan. And the first place we walked into was the Kaitaim Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was run by Eva Rickard. And
right.
I'm sitting there drinking a cup of tea out of an enamel cup, thinking, why does she look familiar? Why do I know her face? And then I realised that it was Eva Rickard, and I was blown away.
All right, yeah.
So that was our sort of first introduction to Raglan, and we just fell in love with the place, and we've been here ever since.
Cool. All right. Yeah. All right. And you've been involved with the Whanganui Harbour Care, of course, since, 20 years, 25 years
25
now?
25 years. We started it in 1995.
Okay. Well, I guess most people will be familiar with it, but I suppose give us a little rundown about it for those who don't.
So how it happened, how it all came about was Fred Litchwark had put a notice up in the Raglan Library. There used to be an old notice board outside the library. And it said, does anyone care that every time it rains, the harbour turns brown and that you can't catch fish? And I thought, actually, I do care. I do care that the harbour turns brown and you can't catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I rang him up and I said to him, what do you think we need to do to turn this around? And he said, well, we've got to get farmers on side. We've got to plant up the streams and plant up the harbour edge and stop all the silt coming into the harbour. And I said, well, that doesn't seem like too hard a job.
Easy,
piece of cake. Anyway, what we realised was that in order to get farmers on board, we needed to create a showcase site. So we approached the Waikato District Council, and Fred and I managed to get ourselves onto what was then the Wainui Reserve Management Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And we suggested to the Wainui Reserve Management Committee that we retire land that was too steep to run a four-wheel motorbike over, that was too wet for stock to be in, or that had streams. And after some very acrimonious meetings and a lot of hair pulling, and we finally managed to convince them to do that. So
their thing was, no, it's all good land.
It's all good land.
Yeah, right,
it's all good land. Okay. So that was the argument, it's all good land. So what we did was we retired over a period of about 5 years. We retired a third of the farm from production. And what we saw happen was pretty unbelievable. It blew us away. They doubled their stocking rate.
Hmm.
They finally had decent fences, so the stock weren't getting bogged in wetlands, which had been quite a common problem. And they were also drinking out of the wetlands and catching liver fluke and things like that.
Yeah.
The farm park manager who was managing the farm, he was able to spend 100% of his time and energy on two-thirds of the farm. So suddenly, that farm became way more productive. And their fertiliser costs went down, and their weed control costs went down, and their pasture improved.
Yeah.
And all of these things just kind of happened. And as a result of that, other farmers in the community sat up and took notice.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, it became really easy because the farmers saw that there was an economic advantage to actually doing this. Mm. And the farmers in the Whangaroa catchment have led New Zealand in riparian management. They are extraordinary, you know. They took to it. Within another sort of 5 years, the ball just kept rolling and rolling and rolling, and we were really struggling to keep up with how many plants and how many areas these farmers wanted to plant. Now there's something like over 600 kilometres of streams that have been fenced in our catchment.
Wow. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's our farmers. They've been amazing,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. So hats off to them for listening to this rabid greenie and listening to Fred and seeing what could be achieved and actually going, actually, there might be something in this and doing it for themselves. And I think what we found is that even farmers that weren't sure, they would go, oh, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you half a metre or a metre either side of the fence, see what you can do. And we'd plant it up. And then we'd get a call the next year going, now look, I've moved the fence back. It's probably about 3 metres back now. Do you think you could come and fill it in? And we go, yeah, of course. Yes, we'll come around and do that for you. And I think it just grew and grew and grew because the farmers just liked it. Mm. You know, they saw the benefits of it. They appreciated the improvements in water quality. They liked the fact that because we plant so densely, there's literally no weeds. So you just get plants, you're not getting weeds, you're getting this lovely barrier between the stream and anything that's coming off the land. And while we're not saying it's a cure-all for all things that come off the land, it certainly helps when it comes to things like sediment and salt.
And the results, I guess, have shown up in the harbour.
Yeah, they have. You know, back in the day, we had catch per unit effort studies done by the Ministry of Fisheries. It took 18 hours to catch a single fish.
Mm.
Those statistics have been blown out of the water time and time again in the past 25 years.
Right.
You know, Fred and the team can go out in the boat. We've got a little harbour care vessel. And within an hour, they've caught their limit of fish.
Nice. Yeah.
And that's just in the harbour,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and we've seen improvements in not just in the water quality, but the things that, like the seagrass. When we first started, there was no seagrass in the harbour. And seagrass is fundamental. It's a fundamental part of the ecosystem, and you need it in order for the snapper to actually lay their eggs in it.
Right.
Yeah. So if you want a snapper fishery, you've got to have you've got to have healthy seagrass.
Yeah.
And healthy seagrass can't grow if there's too much sediment. On a side note, it's also struggling at the moment because we've got so many geese in the harbour and they love to pull it out.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen a few geese coming and going. Yeah,
there's
yeah.
hundreds of them, and a lot of them are tucked up sort of on one of the arms of the Opatuta estuary.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're allowed to shoot all year round now, are you? Or?
I'm not sure what the rules are, but I know farmers don't like them either.
Because
they come onto their pastures and...
Yeah, they hit the maize and that as well, don't they?
Well. Yeah,
they do. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think it's quite a tricky one from what I understand that because no one really knows whose sort of thing it is, a regional council, district council, government, you know, da-da-da-da-da,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's falling between the cracks a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, well, another problem to solve for another day, I guess. Yeah. Always something.
Yeah.
Keeps life interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's harbour care. Over 2 million trees. You stop counting after a while, to be honest. But
that's
I think we're heading to 2.5 million trees.
Okay.
And our team have been working with us. We've got staff that have worked with us for about 22 years.
Yeah.
They're amazing. One of our team members, Roy, he's planted single-handedly at least 500,000 trees.
Far out.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so there's some pretty extraordinary people that are part of our team.
Yeah. And you guys got your own nursery as well, is that right?
Yep, we have. Yeah. It's on part of the Wainui Reserve.
Yeah,
And we've got we've been there for 27 years now, growing the trees there. So it was set up on the smell of an oily rag 27 years ago, and not much has changed. We still run on the smell of an oily rag. We try and keep the costs as low as possible so we can get trees in the ground that's our mission, getting trees in the ground as economically as possible for landowners.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a great story, isn't it?
It is a great story. Yeah.
And it works still ongoing. How many more kilometres are there to go, would you say, around the in the catchment?
Well, there's still, I guess it's the usual thing is that all the early adopters adopted. All the ones that saw how great it was adopted the idea as well.
Mm.
And then you get down to the diehards.
Right. No matter what, I'm not, I don't want nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And you're never going to change some of those attitudes,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So we got some really great advice when we started off in 1995. I knew Arthur Cowan, and Arthur Cowan was part of the Native Forest Restoration Trust, and he set that up. He was one of the original trustees of that. That man was still planting trees in his 90s.
Yeah.
He'd been in World War II. He'd been over in Egypt and places like that in the deserts, and he'd seen what it was like when you had no trees. So he made it his mission when he came back to Waitomo to plant trees. And his mission was to plant 10,000 trees a year, which he did pretty much for the rest of his life.
Far out.
And he gave us some great advice. He said, look, work with the willing. So that's what we've always done. We've always approached farmers that are willing, and we've worked with the willing farmers, and it's just kind of snowballed from there, really. And the Native Forest Restoration Trust now owns something like 28 reserves throughout New Zealand that they manage, that they've purchased to protect wildlife or to protect particular habitats. And one of those is the Four Brothers Scenic Reserve at the top of the Divvy.
Yes.
So you might have noticed that Arthur, after Michael Hope's death, the farm was sold over a period of years to to the Native Forest Restoration Trust. They retired the land from farming, and a lot of it just started to regenerate naturally. You'll see that on the sort of northern side as you're travelling up the Divvy, that's all kind of regenerated naturally.
Mm.
On the southern side, it wasn't so easy because it's on the southern side of things.
Yeah.
And they ended up approaching us, and we worked with them to create a new style of planting, which we called island style.
Island style.
Island style.
All right.
Okay.
So I guess that involves like pineapples and stuff like that.
You might think that, but no. It actually involves Manuka, Kanuka and Totara. And
right.
What we've basically done up there is we've trialled what you could do in steep hill country to regenerate land that's on southern sides of or gnarly steep areas.
Yeah.
And we've tried to do it as cost effectively as possible, so that we can recreate quite rapidly canopy cover and eventually native forest.
Okay.
So because we've basically what we saw happen was on the northern side, which is you get a manuka that kind of starts to appear in the middle of a pasture, and then all the other manuka seem to grow around it. And then another manuka advances down what was once pasture. As soon as you remove the stock and you've got any bush areas nearby, it regenerates pretty quickly in some areas.
Yeah.
In other areas where you know you don't have such a great climate, or it's a more exposed site, or it's more windy, or it's too steep, that doesn't happen naturally.
Mm.
And that was the case for us on the southern side. So we went in there and did this island-style planting where you get bunches of plants and you plant them very densely, and then you walk 100 or 200 metres or 25 metres or however far you fancy walking, and then you put some more in.
All right.
And create these little bunches that eventually all grow together. And that's what's happened in the past 5 years on the southern side. They've all actually merged into one great big piece of canopy cover.
It's not so long, 5 years.
It's not so long.
Yeah.
And so because of that, what we're suggesting to farmers is that there will be areas on everybody's farm that are less productive than other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if everybody takes a pretty analytical and clinical look at what you are earning per hectare off your farm, there will be certain parts of your farm that are earning a lot and other parts of your farm that are not pulling their weight.
So
what we're suggesting or offering to farmers is that where you've got parts of your farm that really aren't pulling their weight in terms of growing pasture for you. And I mean, I've talked to some farmers and they go, oh, see that piece there? I only graze it 2 days a year.
Okay.
They're the kind of pieces we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because they're really not pulling their weight. So where you've got, steep land, south-facing, gnarly stuff, things that it's hard to grow grass on, that's where we think you should be planting it in native trees. Mm. Because it's probably too steep to plant in pine trees. But natives, permanent forest, we think is the way to go.
Mm.
And if we can do it cost effectively enough, you're not going to get rich, but you will make a steady income out of it. And what all the pundits are telling us that do all the financial forecasting is that you'll be making around $850 a hectare off those areas by planting them in natives.
That sounds all right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've looked, we are by no means experts in carbon capture forestry. We are experts in planting trees. We are experts in getting the job done cost effectively.
Mm.
That's what we do. But what we have done is we've approached a variety of people that are experts in the whole carbon capture, and we've asked them to give us some forecasts and some costings about what the returns could be if people planted for carbon capture. And so if there are some criteria that if you're thinking about it, you have to be aware of, and I've made some little notes to myself, so I'll just read them out to you.
All right.
The first one is in order for your piece of area, your piece of land that you're thinking of, you need a minimum in total of 5 hectares for it to be included in the ETS, the Environmental Trading Scheme.
And that's in one block or doesn't necessarily
no,
have to
be? No, it can be the smallest size block you can have is 1 hectare, mm-hmm. but you have to have a total of 5
gotcha.
In total
okay.
for it to be considered. Okay, right. So that's the first thing.
All right.
If you've already got forest that's established after 1989, then you can automatically have that included in the ETS scheme as well. So if you don't, if you've already got something that you don't want to plant up, if you've already got that 5 hectares, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Get it in there.
Man, it'd be quite hard to sort of prove it was actually after 1989 or whatever, or before, wouldn't it?
Well, a lot of them can do it from satellite photography and aerial photography, so they can use that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So because there has been quite a lot of that. LIDAR has been flown over and all sorts of other things have been flown over the years by regional councils. And
mm-hmm.
And often farmers themselves may have an aerial photo of their farm.
Mm-hmm.
So there is all that sort of stuff that they use. The other thing is that the forest has to be able to grow to a height of 5 metres high. Okay.
Okay.
So while we start out planting Manuka, we do that initially just to get enough canopy cover so that you can get your podocarps and your other species planted underneath it because they won't grow in the middle of the paddock.
Which
is why you always get Manuka. So our mix that we propose is Manuka, Kanaka, which does grow to 5 metres, and Totara, because that stuff will grow anywhere.
Mm.
But you have to have the canopy cover to chuck it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and at the end of it, what they're looking for is a 30% canopy cover over that 5 hectares. So the canopy has to be, all of that 5 hectares, 30% of that 5 hectares has to be canopy. So it has to be those species that are 5 metres or taller.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
The width, so while you're talking about 5 hectares, the width, the minimum width is 30 metres wide.
Okay.
Okay. But what they won't let you have is a stream running through the middle of it. So you have to have either 30 metres on one side of the stream and another 30 metres on the other side.
Okay.
You can't do 15 metres either side
of
your stream. Okay.
Right.
So there's a few little things you have to watch out for. And you have to plant eligible tree species, which is the Manuka Kanaka Totara mix.
So what's ineligible?
Gorse.
Damn it.
Things like that. So and species that aren't going to grow to 5 meters high. So right. if it was all just Manuka, they wouldn't be interested in it.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So the other thing you have to so basically what happens is that you work with one of these organisations, one of these companies that will assist you to measure the carbon that's captured. And they base it on, which is why they say only eligible species, because they've done all their forecasting on a handful of native species. Okay,
right.
So they've forecasted out for 50 years how much carbon those plants will sequester. Okay, and that's what the whole thing is based on. It's based on these mythical figures.
Okay, these might do this, might do that. Okay, yeah.
Okay, right. But looking at... looking at 5 hectares, if you planted 5 hectares of your farm in native forest, you would expect it to yield in the next 28 years, by 2050, 1,200 carbon credits. Okay?
Okay.
Now, at the moment, carbon credits are around $74 a tonne. So this is those are 1,200 tonnes, basically, of...
Yeah, all right.
Of carbon that will be sequestered or collected up by the trees.
Mm.
They're predicting by 2050 that it'll maybe as high as $250 per tonne.
Okay, so that's more than double. Right.
Yeah.
So that's starting to look
quite attractive.
Pretty lucrative, isn't it?
Yeah, that's looking pretty lucrative. Yeah. So what you have to do is go, I'm not going to make money in the first few years.
Mm.
But if you're a long-term thinker and you're thinking about your retirement or you're thinking about your kids or you're thinking about your grandchildren, then it starts to become a lot more attractive planting native trees.
Mm, mm, mm,
yeah.
Mm.
But it is not a get-rich-quick scheme.
No.
It's a get financially okay-ish long-term. Am I selling this to you?
Yeah. No, sounds right to me. Yeah. All right, okay, yeah, no, well, okay, so what if I said to you, why don't I just plant pines everywhere?
Yeah, well, if you're going to plant pines, then you need to decide, are you then going to be harvesting them at some point? Because mm-hmm. then you get a whole chunk of costs associated with harvesting them.
Yes, yes.
So while it might be cheap to plant them, you have to put roading in, you've got to fell them, you've got to harvest them, you've got a massive cost associated with all of that.
Mm.
And then you've got to pay your carbon credits back because you've...
Oh, yeah, true, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it starts to become not so attractive in the longer term. Mm,
mm.
So, and there's the mess it makes all over your farm. And then what are you going to do with the land again? Are you going to put it in pine trees again or what are you going to do?
Mm, mm.
For us, after trying to plant in an area that has been pine forest is a nightmare.
I've heard this. Actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we would so from our perspective as tree planters, we would rather just plant directly into your pasture on steep land.
I suppose you're working around the stumps, and then of course, you know, it's
and that
increases, quite a dead sort
and
of soil,
that increases
isn't it?
The cost. Yeah. Of planting, you know, whereas if you're just going directly into straight pasture, it's much easier.
Okay.
Yeah. And cheaper.
All right.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the best time to plant a native tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today.
Yep.
Especially if you want to be collecting credits to 2050.
Yep.
You need to... you know, get them in the ground this year or next year.
What's it now? 2022, isn't it?
2022. Yeah, 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 so you know, get them in the ground this. If you're thinking about it, don't think too long about it. Get them in the ground this year. Get them in the ground next year. Get them in the ground.
Mm. And then it's done.
And then it's done. Yeah. And then you'll be collecting credits, you know, for the next 28 years.
Well, then plus everything else, right? Like the increase in biodiversity.
Yes.
I mean, eventually everything else is going to go through that.
Yep.
And
And we've seen that in the harbour.
Yeah,
you know, and for me, from an environmental perspective, I'm really interested in increasing biodiversity and carbon capture through corridors. So linking up our areas of high biodiversity, like Porongia, like Karioi, like the Wairena, Bradwell Falls, like the Toripāru wetland on the far side of Karioi, connecting all those up with biodiversity and carbon capture corridors. Because then you're talking landscape scale biodiversity benefit, you know?
Interesting, yeah. Now, I've talked to both Crystal from the Karioi Project and Bex in a new role, the Mangatautiri to Porongia corridor. It's got a different name. I can't remember it right now, but yeah. And yeah, it sounds such a exciting and, I don't know, it's exciting and it seems like such a good idea. And it seems... doesn't seem that difficult to do from what, you know, from what I hear. You know?
Well, like with all these things, it's not rocket science. And that's what, you know, if you'd said to us 25 years ago, you're going to plant 2.5 million trees, you're going to make a difference to water quality in the harbour, you're going to see biodiversity increase, you're going to see fish stocks ramp up, we'd have laughed because we didn't think it was possible. But those things have happened, and because of what we have achieved in Whangaroa, we've been from one end of New Zealand to the other spreading the message, being invited onto marae, being invited to community care groups from one end of New Zealand to the other to talk about what's been achieved on the smell of an oily rag with a bunch of nutty people that came up with an idea that literally sat down with an envelope and wrote numbers on the back of an envelope, and we went, okay, so there's... the harbour is, I think it was 150 kilometres around. There's 425 square kilometre catchment. How many trees is that going to take?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
We ran out of fingers and we just went, oh, well, we'll just start, you know. Yeah. And sometimes that's all you have to do. You just have to start. Yeah. And it may seem overwhelming and it may seem like it's never going to get any better and it may seem like it's never going to be possible, but you just have to take a step.
Yeah. What's that old saying? Like, take one step towards nature and she'll take three towards you or something.
Absolutely.
Like that, isn't it? Like that, isn't
we've,
it? Yeah.
We've got this great saying that what our job is to kickstart Mother Nature. So what we do is we take this this farmland that is can be utilised differently by turning it into a beautiful riparian area or to a carbon capture forest, and we just help Mother Nature do what she does best, you know. So if we put some trees in there, within literally 5 years, you won't recognise the place.
It's cool, isn't it?
It is. It's really cool.
It must have been really exciting for you too, getting around the country, you know, getting invited to all these things like you're talking about, just meeting like other passionate people and like, hey, how'd you guys do it? And
able
to share that. I mean,
yeah,
it must
absolutely.
Be,
and we have groups
rewarding, gratifying.
It is. And we're, we have run this whole thing where, you know, groups will come and work with our team and they'll see how we propagate plants. They'll see how we grow plants. They'll work alongside our team planting the plants, you know. So they get the whole experience all the way through of gathering the seed, growing the seed, potting on the plants, planting the plants out. So they can see all of those stages. And then, you know, I would talk to them about, this is how you can write a funding application. Here, have all these myriad of funding applications I've written over the years. Knock yourselves out, you know. Just change the name. Don't recreate the wheel. If they were trying to set up an incorporated society, we just hand over our rules, you know. Knock yourselves out, change the words, have at it, you know.
Awesome.
Because we can't do it all ourselves. And the best thing is to see people doing it for themselves. You know, and to see communities taking ownership around New Zealand wanting to make a difference. And that's been so exciting to see.
All right. What's a couple of notable examples spring to mind of people you've kind of helped along the way that are going along well now?
Sure. Well, we did a lot of work with Puniu River Care Group, who are now one of the biggest native nurseries in the Waikato.
Puniu, where's that Puniu. One again?
That's over towards, I'm trying to think of the name of the town.
Moranville?
Sort of further south than that.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, over
anyway,
there.
Anyway, yeah, can't remember there. The name. Yeah, yeah. Can see it in my head. Can't remember. Yeah. So Puniya Rivercare, and we're working with people on the west coast of the South Island. So
true.
The Karamea Rivercare group down there.
We've worked
with people up in Northland.
Mm-hmm.
Otamatea Harbour Care group. They've been going for 12 years now. We've also helped out the Moihau team that are doing planting up in the Coromandel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, farmer groups, environmental groups, care groups, you name it. You know, there's just been I've lost count.
Yeah, cool. That's really exciting. Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, being an inspiration to all these other groups to do it. Yeah, it must be, yeah, really, really gratifying.
Yeah. No, it is. It really is.
I better check this because sometimes I get texts about the questions to ask. Oh. Puniya River. Yeah, we are. It's Craig.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Instructing.
Craig. Instructing. Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Craig.
Instructing. What was I going to say? Puniya River. Tiamuti.
Tiamuti. That's the name.
There we are. Good on you, Craig. Thank you for that. Yep. TA. Of course. Yes.
Excellent. Thanks, Craig.
All right. And so, and the Harbour Care is still going on, but I guess, yeah, the main thing is, so for farmers who might be interested in, you know, making a nest egg-ish thing for themselves or their children or all their grandkids down the line a little bit, what do you do about it?
Give us a call. It's really that simple. Yeah. Just give us a call. We'll come down to the nursery if you're in Raglan, or email. Happy to talk through stuff. Happy to talk through the options. Look at the land. We give free quotes. You know, we'll come out to you. We'll stand on your land. We'll talk it all through with you. You tell us what you want. I guess we have always, when we've worked with farmers, it's always been a bit of give and take.
Mm-hmm.
So when we've been doing riparian planting, a farmer might say, I use that area there in the summer because it's wet. It remains wet and I need it for pasture purposes,
yeah,
because everything else is brown but that's still green, and we'll go, fine, okay, how about if we take that eroding little piece of hillside slightly up there then? And they'll go, yes,
I suppose so.
Yeah, that's how it goes. But it is, we just kind of, you know, work with people, and I mean, it's your land, it's their land, and it's not our land, but we just want to work with them and do what we can to meet what's now. I mean, what you have to understand is when we started this 25 years ago, well, 27 now I think it is, there were no rules around planting around waterways. There was no requirement from Vonterra. There was no requirement from the Regional Council.
Mm.
None of those things existed. We were going in with no... We had nothing to beat anybody over the head with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just willing farmers. So, you know, I'm just saying, any willing farmers out there, please contact us, and we'd love to come and talk to you, and we'd love to come and talk about what the possibilities are.
Fantastic.
And we can put you in contact with a variety of different organisations that can do all the financial modelling and can come and do an assessment of your land as well and all of those sorts of things. But we can definitely help you when it comes to the planting, and we can definitely give you a quote that will hopefully not shock you.
And you've got tons and tons of experience in doing that and
doing it really well and cheaply.
And cheaply.
And I guess what I should say is that because we've developed this you know, island-style model, we're looking at planting up to about 3,500 stems per hectare, okay? Which is in excess of what the ministry MPI requires, but
which is,
well, they're saying you need for your species that are going to grow to 5 meters, 357.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's considerably more, but why we're suggesting this is that because we know the plants will grow well and they'll grow faster, and you'll be getting your money quicker.
Makes sense.
Makes sense.
All right. And to get a hold of you, have you got like a website or something, healthcare or whatever?
Yep, we've got Harbour
Care. Whangarei Harbour Care.
Just Harbour Care.
Oh, just Harbour Care.
Harbourcare.nz.
Harbourcare.nz, all right.
And you can contact us through that, or you can give me a call or email me directly.
And to get a hold of your number would be?
My number is 021.
Sure you want to get it on here? Up to you.
It's no problem. 021-159-3327.
Okay, there we go, folks. So that's how you get a hold of Fiona. And anything else you want to contribute?
I guess the only other thing I wanted to say to people is if they are at some point thinking of selling their land, they may be wondering, are there any obligations in terms of credits if they sell their farm? But basically what the ETS is saying is that if you have if you've got your plants registered through the emissions trading scheme, then that gets transferred to the new owners.
Right.
Okay. So it only gets complicated if you decide to deregister from the ETS.
Okay.
That's when life gets a bit more complicated.
All right.
And that's when you need to talk to somebody else.
So is it kind of like, oh, man, you know, I can't be bothered registering with the, you know, the ETS scheme and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I guess you guys don't do that, but you'd be able to put people in touch with who you can.
We can put them in touch with people that do that.
Yep.
And and they may charge a fee, and it might be like a few percent of your earnings, and that can be either less at the beginning and more later on, or some of them have a completely flat rate all the way through.
Well, so there you go, folks. Yeah, you don't have to think about it, really. All you got to do is make the decision, really, and you know. And Craig sends another one here. Vote for Fiona.
No, you're
standing
for
mayor or something, eh? Or?
Not at all. I'm interested in a very quiet life. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Fiona. Really appreciate it. And, good luck with that. So contact details are, harbourcare.nz. And Fiona just gave a number there. And I'm sure if you talk to, I guess a lot of farmers around the harbour, you'll have to track it down. And,
absolutely. And you can also email Fred. He's fred@harbourcare.co.nz.
fred@harbourcare.co.nz. Actually, one more thing I was just thinking about was like QE2 blocks and things like that. Are they, I suppose you couldn't use them because they're already getting like used for something else, I presume. No?
It depends when they were planted or when how long they've been there for. Okay. Often those ones that fit the QE2 criteria are quite long.
Yeah, probably already mature.
With a lot of biodiversity in them.
So
post-1989.
Post-1989, all right, there we are. Yeah. All right, and is there anything else that kind of that?
No, just like I say, you know, the best time to plant a tree was last year, 20 years ago. Last year's the next best, and this year and next year would be really good. Thank you.
All right, so there we are. There's, get over it, folks. And thanks very much, Fiona. I really appreciate
you coming.
You're
welcome. Pleasure.
Thank you.